This season of the Lake Effect Podcast is made possible by the Randolph J. and Estelle M. Dorn Foundation.
This episode is sponsored in part by Shores and Islands, Ohio. S&IO embodies the excitement felt from the very first time you visit. Shores and Islands, Ohio. It's a sure thing. More information at shoresandislands.com.
Hey, this is James Proffitt. Thanks for checking out today's episode of the Lake Effect Podcast. Today, I am on South Bass Island talking to Dustin Heineman, who was the big boss at Heineman Wineries.
I'm actually the fifth generation to operate the family-owned business.
Really? Five generations?
Yes.
So that was your great-great-great-grandparents?
Great-great-grandfather, Gustav Heineman.
Okay.
Back in 1888.
Is that a German name?
Yes.
In 1888?
Yep, came over here from Germany and around. He actually came to America in about 1880 or so, and he started at Lahn's Winery, which back then, of course, would have been the Golden Eagle Wine Cellars.
Okay. And that's on another island?
Yep, that's on Middle Bass, just across the lake.
Okay.
Just across our bay.
Did he start making wine right off the bat? Was he already in the business in Germany?
I believe he was.
Okay.
There's actually still a Heineman family winery in Germany.
Really?
Yes.
Part of your family?
Yes.
No kidding.
You know, distant relatives, but
okay.
But part of the Heineman family.
Have you guys been back and forth between the two?
I've actually never been to Germany. I know my father, Edward, passed away in 2023. He was there at least once, and I know my grandfather, Louis, was over there a couple times as well.
So you guys have vineyards on the island?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, we have about 15 acres over here, give or take, and then there's also about 8 acres that are owned by other island families that we take care of as well.
How many different types of wine does Heineman's produce?
Well, we produce about anywhere between 20 to 23 different kinds of wine.
You're kidding. I thought it was like 5 or 6.
Well, it actually used to be back in the 80s before my dad became chief winemaker. That's one of his, what he did with, you know, bringing more varieties of wine here.
Okay. No kidding. And you make it right here?
Yes. Yep. Okay. We make it right in the cellar down below. Yep.
Not in a big factory somewhere and they put your name on it and ship it in?
No.
Okay. Cool.
Yep. All made right here on site. Now we don't grow all the grapes that are used to make our wine.
Right.
But we do grow the majority of them, and the rest of the grapes come from the Lake Erie region.
Okay. That was going to be my next question. They're all regional.
Yep. They're all Ohio and they're all Lake Erie, Appalachia grapes.
Okay. I feel like somewhere I read that there are some special varieties of grapes that were brought to the islands from somewhere out west, maybe. I can't remember. Decades and decades ago. Are there any special varieties?
Well, we grow 5 varieties on the island here, which are the native grapes, which are Catawba, Concord, Niagara, Delaware, and Ives.
Okay.
And then on North Bass Island before, years ago in the 70s, they used to grow Riesling and Chardonnay and all the, you know, the hybrids and the viniferas over there.
Okay.
The Gewurztraminer was over there. There's some Merlot, I think, some Cab Franc, Cab Sauv, but...
Are you trying to get fancy on me?
A little bit.
What's the season here as far as you guys operate a business where people can come and sample wine and buy wine?
Usually we're open from about mid-April until Halloween.
Okay. And when do you actually make the wine?
We're actually making the wine all year long.
Really?
You know, in the summer, we're bottling at least 2 to 3 times a week, depending on which kind of wines we need.
Okay.
And then... you know, the harvest season comes around in the fall. That's when we start picking and pressing and crushing all of our grapes. And then, you know, they go through the fermentation process, which takes anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, given the wine, the temperature, you know, several different variables. And then after that, the wine settles for a couple months. And
When you say settles, what does that mean?
Basically, all the once it's done fermenting, it'll start to settle in the sediment, you know, grape skins, anything left over from the fermentation process will fall to the bottom of the tanks. And you'll, I have to go through and rack all the wines, which basically means getting the clean wine off the sediment.
The business here during the season. I've been over here. I've seen a lot of people here, a lot of cars, a lot of golf carts. How crowded does it get in the summertime?
It gets pretty hectic here, especially, you know, our peak season, I would say, is from like Memorial weekend until Labor Day weekend.
Okay.
You know, especially once the schools get out.
Right.
That's when we really pick up here, you know, because a lot of our business base here is the families.
Right. I did not see any bouncers or security like you might see at some of the bars elsewhere on the island. Is that the case?
Yes, that is the case here. We, you know, we're very family oriented here, especially, like I said, after school starts, you know, there's a lot of kids. Kids enjoy the Crystal Cave and the grape juice. And
Crystal Cave, what is that?
That is the world's largest known celestite geode. It's basically a hollow rock, which is lined with crystals. Usually they are golf ball to softball size. So for there to be one that is about 40 feet wide.
40 feet wide.
Is definitely miraculous. And Crystal Cave, that is one of the reasons, well, actually, that's the main reason Heinemann Winery is still here today.
And why is that?
Well, back during Prohibition in the 20s, there used to be 17 plus wineries on this small little island here. And when Prohibition came, most of them fell in, you know, their vineyards fell in disrepair because they couldn't sell wine. And we were able to survive by giving tours of Crystal Cave.
Really?
And we also had, Gustav also had a taxi company too that would bring tourists from downtown up here to visit Crystal Cave. And at that time, Mammoth Cave, which is still owned by, you know, the Heinemann family today, was open. So he was given tours of that as well.
Now, the statute of limitations is up. So be honest. During Prohibition, did you guys sell a little bit of wine out the back door?
I'm sure. I wasn't around to witness that, but I would almost imagine, yes, that probably happened. I think that happened more than people think around the islands.
And I feel like I read that a lot of wineries sold grape juice during Prohibition, and people made their own wine at home.
Yes, they actually, I have one in a collection somewhere, but they actually used to sell grape juice with instructions on how to
really
not turn it into wine.
Ah, okay. Yes, it's a technicality, huh?
Yes.
Huh, no kidding. Now, this Crystal Cave, is it the only cave on the island?
It is not. I mean, it's the only cave on the island of its formation. Now, when you think of caves, especially in Ohio here, most of them are the limestone caves that have the stalactites and the stalagmites and the underground lake, like Perry's Cave across the street from us, and of Mammoth Cave as well. But ours is, it's a geode, so it's definitely a different cave, if you will. It's, you know, still classified as a cave, you're underground, but, you know, it's really a geode.
So it's not a cave where you think of where you're going through long, winding passageways over long distance. It's a giant, hollow geode.
Correct. And when they first discovered it, of course, it wasn't hollow, you know, because when you crack open a geode, there's crystals around the whole thing. So they had to mine a lot of the crystals on the floor of what we call the floor of the geode today. And, you know, they mined a lot of them back then. They used it in fireworks and flares, because when you burn that stuff, the celestite compound, it burns red.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah, of course you have to add other
ingredients,
stuff to it. I am not very keen on exactly how that works.
Right. So you're saying years ago, it was a solid geode underground, and then someone discovered it and bored into it or mined into it?
It was actually discovered in 1897 while Gustav and his workmen, they were digging a second well for the winery.
Dustin, do you guys just sell the wine in this area, or do people that have been here before from somewhere else in the country, do you ship wine?
Most of our wine, actually probably about 80% or more of our wine, is sold right here in the summertime.
On the island?
Yes, right in our sales room here.
Okay.
But we do have one distributor, who, Nooney Inc., and they are getting our wine all across the state of Ohio. And in fact, I think he is trying to move our wine into Michigan right now. So you might eventually see it on a store shelf there. But we also UPS wine to about 37 different states around the,
really?
The U.S.
Okay. And those are people that have probably had it here.
Correct.
Visiting.
Yep. Huh. Yep. We're always getting calls saying, you know, hey, I was at your winery. We love your wine. And where can we find it?
Not looking at anything now, but if someone reads one of the labels of one of your wines, is it going to say something like hint of leather, smoke, jasmine, computer keyboard, sky, etc.?
Yes, not all of them do. You know, we that's one of the things that I kind of did back in 2013 when we were celebrating the battle, the bicentennial of the Battle of Lake Erie, and we were also celebrating our 25th anniversary back then. But I kind of redid a lot of our labels, so now each one of our wines has its own specific label with, you know, its own history on it.
Really?
I basically took a lot of historical pictures of the winery and the cave and the vineyards and, you know, put them on the labels so that, we could share that with everybody, basically. And not all of our wines have a back label, but some of them have a label on the back that kind of talks about what kind of wine you're drinking. Mainly it's the dry wines, you know, like our Chardonnay or our Pinot Grigio, which is usually known for its citrus notes.
Okay. Notes. That's what I was thinking of. Notes. I am told that you guys make a special wine that comes in a skinny bottle.
Oh, yes. The iced wine.
What is that?
That is a wine made from frozen grapes, not to be confused with ice wine. Ice wine, the traditional way of making ice wine, is you freeze the grapes on the vine, when the first frost comes around, and then you pick those grapes and you freeze them frozen. Now, because our frost comes much later in the season because the lake surrounds us here, we actually take the grapes off the vine and artificially freeze them.
Okay.
Which gives it the iced wine, spelled I-C-E-D, adding that D at the end. But it's a dessert wine, and when you freeze the grapes, it's a real concentrated juice that you get, but it's all natural sweetness, and it almost tastes like honey.
That style of wine is always more expensive. Is that because it takes much more grapes?
Yeah,
many more grapes to produce.
Yeah, because when you freeze the grapes, you get a third of the juice that you normally would. So of course we put it in a skinnier bottle, and you know, because that wine is a thicker consistency wine, you know, some people use it and pour it on like ice cream and desserts and stuff like that. So of course you don't really want to drink a whole bottle of that stuff.
Okay. Dustin, I've seen wine that has screw caps and wine that has either natural cork or artificial cork. What's the difference? Because I feel like I've read that corks are not as efficient as screw tops.
As screw tops. Actually, to be honest, I don't really think it makes a difference.
Okay.
What we do here is most of our screw cap wines are wines made with grapes grown right on the island here. And then our corked wines, which would be, you know, like our Island Chablis, which comes in a beautiful blue bottle, or our Riesling, or our dry reds and whites. Those are in the corked one, or, you know, corked bottles.
Okay.
And we use artificial corks. Years ago, we used to use real cork, but real cork is hard to find these days.
Right.
And then, of course, with real cork, you run the risk of the cork drying out, so you would always have to have the bottle flipped over. So artificial cork is just easier. But really, it's just presentation purposes. There's no real difference, in my opinion.
Okay.
You know, you can have the best wine in the world with a screw cap or a cork.
Okay.
Hudson Bay itself, of course, I talked about how there were 17 wineries here at one time, vineyards everywhere. But, you know, there's just so much history here with hotel. We used to have Hotel Victory here, which at that time had 625 rooms, and it was the largest wooden resort in the world.
And where was that at?
That was actually at our state park.
Okay.
You can.
There's the remnants of it.
Yes.
Foundation.
You still see the parts of the foundation and the remnants of the swimming pool, which was the one of the first co-ed swimming pools where men and women could swim together.
Really?
But between the history that we have, you know, with the vineyards and with Hotel Victory, of course, we have Perry's Monument here as well. Unfortunately, it's going to be closed for the next 2 years. You know, it's still a beautiful, beautiful monument. And, you know, I'm just proud to continue the, you know, the family operations here. We're Ohio's oldest family owned and operated winery, which is something that you don't see a lot of today. You don't see a lot of family owned anything, really. Everything's all corporations.
I was just going to say, there seems to be a lot of consolidation in this industry.
Yes. And the,
when are you selling out?
Never. I won't be the one to do that. No, I don't think so. And actually, you know, we didn't talk about it too much on here, but Mammoth Cave, which is another cave that our family owns across the street here, closed in, I think it was 1952 or 1954, but there are plans to reopen that cave again and allow the public to to visit it.
And is that a different style of cave?
That one, yes. I mean, it's very similar to Perry's Cave across the street, but it's actually a little bit bigger.
Really?
And it was originally known as Doss's Cave and then renamed Mammoth Cave when Gustav Heinemann and the Put-in Bay Resort Company that he managed bought it and started operating it. Making the wine, you know, my father in 2023 sadly passed away, and up until that point he was the chief winemaker.
Okay.
And that was one of the things I was really worried about, was taking over what he used to do. You know, he graduated from Ohio State back in 1980. You know, he was taking classes in enology, the study of winemaking, and food technology. And myself, when I graduated high school in 2006, I tried college, but it was not my thing.
Right.
I came back here and I got more of a hands-on experience. So everything, you know, I know today about winemaking, I learned from my father.
And not from a book.
Correct. You know, from my father or from my grandfather.
Okay. Dustin, I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day at the winery to talk to us about your family's history on the island and what you currently do here. I appreciate it, and hopefully one day I will see you somewhere around the lake.
Thanks for joining me for this edition of the Lake Effect Podcast. I'm your host and producer, James Proffitt. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. To hear more, go to wgte.org/lakeeffect. And I hope to see you somewhere around the lake.
WGTE. Voices around us.
This episode is sponsored in part by Shores and Islands, Ohio. S&IO embodies the excitement felt from the very first time you visit. Shores and Islands, Ohio. It's a sure thing. More information at shoresandislands.com.
This season of the Lake Effect Podcast is made possible by the Randolph J. and Estelle M. Dorn Foundation.